Hello and welcome to the Digital Construction Skills Podcast. My name is Chris Grant and I'm Partnerships Manager here at Digital Construction Skills. Today, I'm really excited to be joined by Phil Thompson of NG Bailey. And we're here to talk about the innovative and low-cost digital procurement tool that has transformed their business. And we're going to find out how this relates to what is known as a golden thread of information and what the industry can learn from this solution. So Phil, you're very welcome and it's great to see you.
Hi, Chris. Yeah, I'm very well, thank you. Very well indeed.
Phil, do you want to just begin briefly by telling people who you are, what your role is, and a little bit about NG Bailey as a company?
Okay, so I'm the procurement data manager, and I've worked for NG Bailey for 33 years. I've done various roles, started off as a tradesman and an apprentice electrician in 88. And I've done various roles in the business through engineering, estimation, into procurement, and then into best practice, which is what I did before I came into this role I'm doing at the moment of procurement data manager. NG Bailey itself, for those that are not familiar with our organisation, we're a very large building services contractor for in the MEP sector. We have a turnover of $500 million. We've been going for 100 years, so it's our centenary year this year. We have a business that's based predominantly engineering, but we also have a services division as well.
Brilliant. So, Phil, you came right from the tools then, right the way up. So you've seen it from every angle then in your career so far then, would you say?
Absolutely, yes. Because I've got that background as a tradesman on the tools, well, it was something that I've always been able to use that evidence in a lot of the conversations that I have and the work that I do in the supply chain, because I have a quite a good feel for the products because I've actually handled them, I've installed them, and then obviously in supervisory roles and procurement roles.
Right, brilliant. So I was going to say that before we go into the digital tool, then that's what we're here to talk about, this digital procurement tool that you've been heavily involved with. Can I just begin by asking then, what was the initial problem you identified as a business that prompted you to take action?
So, Chris, we were working, we had a role in the business to look at best practice. So we had myself and a couple of other colleagues up and down the country that were trying to improve productivity on site. At the time, there was an emphasis on the Latham and Egan reports, the output from those and other documents that were in the sector. And we wanted to basically adopt this lean approach. So we, myself and a couple of other people went on some internal courses and we learned about lean construction and how to improve productivity, look at value add, non-value add and waste. And we did a number of activities with the site teams, using video analysis, getting under the skin of the actual installation activity. And then we do internal training courses and a whole range of things, really, just to generally improve the approach to productivity and raise awareness. And as part of the analysis, we kept finding a common theme, which was around poor material management, product selections, deliveries to site, returns, defects, material handling, et cetera, and a lot of this was linked to the actual installation activity, where we were trying to get better at the actual installation, improve the labour aspect. And there was always a bottleneck around getting the materials to site, because you need the materials as well as the labour resource to carry out an efficient installation. So it was really the findings from that that piece of work that we did that led us to start to focus more on the procurement and the material aspects.
So, and then has this been a gradual approach? I mean, Phil, I mean, you're talking the Latham and Egan report, so you're going way back to like the 90s, aren't you? I mean, has it been as far back as that this approach has been in place, or when did it really kick off, or when did the penny drop for this?
I think the activity that we're focusing on today, which is the procurement platform, we started 7 years ago, but I was working in a best practice function that we labelled it. I was working in that role for some 3 to 4 years prior to taking on this initiative. So it was the learning, really, and it was quite a steep curve, because I came from a background of, as I say, engineering, but I had very little knowledge about the lean construction agenda. And so I went on a bit of a journey to understand what that looked like. And we went to some automotive manufacturers to learn what they'd done. And we had a few other people in the business that we drew on their experience to kind of just really establish what we wanted as a business from the lean construction agenda. And it was still quite new to the industry. And even now, I don't really believe it's truly embedded, not like it is in automotive or aerospace. But a lot of the activities as well were centered around process mapping, using activities like Last Planner. So it was the post-its on the wall activities and breaking down the individual activities against the program.
Yeah, so I suppose essentially, like Lean, maybe for people who are maybe not familiar with it, it has came from the automotive industry, and I think it was Toyota, wasn't it, and people like that was kind of modelled on that kind of business model, wasn't it? Yeah, so just to make productize and be more efficient, and that's what to paint a bit of a background. So that's good, a good background then. So maybe we just talk about the digital tool itself then, and you know the specific problem around procurement then, and you know. Tell us about, you know, how did you make the business case for the tool?
Okay, so in terms of the scope and how we kind of kicked the initiative off, at the time, the best practice function that was addressing this need for this lean approach, we had a fairly good working relationship with the procurement teams at the time. So we just kind of came together and there was some natural synergy there. As you know, sometimes in business, it's kind of just having that networking and coming together. And the individuals as well were in the same geographical location, the same office. So we managed to have these conversations. And, you know, it starts off like many of these things of, you know, do you realize we've got a problem over there or such a person's addressed, wants to address an issue. So we just started to have this conversation and we started to understand, that it was a procurement activities that were leading to these bottlenecks in the process, mm-hmm. these frustrations that were causing these delays in our activities. So we then started to look at instead of looking at the site activity, which was an output of poor productivity, we started to look at the procurement activities, the inputs rather, the actual transactional side. How did we go about selecting materials? What meetings did we have with the supply chain? What was the internal process? What platforms did we have? What technology were we using? And I, at this time, I knew very little about our data services. So again, it was another journey of learning as to what we're actually doing. And we came together and we started to scope out. So it was myself from a best practice team. And then we had our procurement director and we had our systems manager as well. Who had responsibility at the time for the information in our business systems. And we started to come together and we selected a preferred supplier and we started to scope it out. And we did a lot of work with the particular supplier as well to make sure that we were learning from them as well as to what was actually possible before we just tried to make, you know, unrealistic demands.
Mm-hmm. And was this so it was a bespoke solution you came up with then? Fell.
It was, yeah. It's completely unique, and it's not complicated. In essence, we built an e-catalog, a product selection tool, and it's not. Although it works in a very similar way to modern shopping systems, it doesn't have complex pricing information in there. It just allows our engineers to select products. It creates a catalog of information held centrally. All pulled together in a standard format, and they simply select the items. So previously, what they would have done, they would have gone into a requisitioning system. And if we go back a number of steps, requisitions in construction and in our business would have been, they would have been over the phone, they would have been paper, they would have been faxes, etc. And I can remember going back 25, maybe 30 years when people would still go to phone boxes to place orders for materials. So they would literally go with a handwritten note that they'd gone for the materials they require. They would go into the phone box and they would phone the buyer or the procurement team and they would express what they wanted over the phone. And of course, quite often they would use like colloquial terms to describe things, or they would use their own references, and the buyer would have to interpret that, and they wouldn't really give them a specific reference, or they wouldn't give them a part number. So it did lead to errors. I can remember, you know, materials turning up and people saying, "That's not what I wanted. Well, it might be what they thought they wanted, but it wasn't what they expressed correctly. And it was this Chinese whispers approach, you know, one person knows what they want, the other person thinks they know what they want, and hey, presto, something different turns up. So, and then, of course, we transitioned, we had fax machines, and we were still doing handwritten faxes as well for a while, handwritten purchase requisition. So the requisition books would have been, at the time, I remember they were carbonated. So you would have a copy on site and you would have a tear-off copy that you would fax or put in the post, and they would go in. But again, they were handwritten. So you had transcription errors. So people would make mistakes. They wouldn't read it properly. And at the time, I remember from some of my early experiences working in procurement, where I was more of looking at subcontracts, but I remember some of my colleagues sort of struggling with this information. So we kind of learned from some of these little mistakes, and obviously we didn't want to embed that in a new digitalized platform. So we decided that culturally as well, it was important not just to have this platform in place, but to embed an expectation around the engineers about how they used it. So we stopped using anything handwritten. So there was no more free text descriptions. Our platform at the time allowed what they call commodity code lines. So again, this is very common in the industry where somebody uses a code, but it's a very broad, it's an overhead code. So one code could mean many, many things. It's not specific to an item. So for instance, you could use a mechanical code, but you could describe an electrical item, which then, you know, doesn't correlate. So we stopped people using those as well, and we just focused on single unique identifiers, at one piece of information which related to the product that they wanted. And then we built this platform, or we had this platform built for us. We scoped it out, which allowed us to use this information in a repeat format.
Mm-hmm. And where did the source information come from? So how did the guys actually go and build the platform for you? Where did they take the information from? And, you know, what was the process of that, you know, evolving into what you have now?
So we work with our third party vendor, a company called Trimble Luckins, and they in essence provide product data into the industry. They've been doing it for 55 years. So they started off as providing paper booklets, information that would be used by the estimation and procurement teams, and they would send update pages and information. And their job was basically to, in essence, they were printers, I suppose. They were providing this context, but it was used by the industry. And then the information over a number of years became digitized, and it was available in our business system. And even to this day, we still use the information that comes from their system through an API connection. So we worked with them to scope it out, and they had some developers, and we basically just scoped out what we want. They did some sort of early graphics, some screenshots, and then they basically produced this platform in a test version initially. And we went through a number of iterations then of testing it and making sure it was what we wanted. We also had to do some work with our internal IT to make sure that there was some connectivity there, because obviously this platform sits as an external application, and then it has to feed the information that's then created into our procurement platform.
Right, and so from building it then to having something that you could work with, and in the test, I mean, you know, even just take us through then the building, maybe how long it took to test, and then, you know, and then before it became live, if you like, you know, what did that project look like? Because I think people would be interested to find out, because obviously the reason I'm asking, Phil, is just because a lot of people are looking to maybe build a solution, and they may be overwhelmed by, you know, blinded by how much it's going to cost or whatever. But you maybe just kind of spell this out. You know, you looked at one solution and just take us through what, you know, what the process was, you know, in terms of time.
Okay, so the scope, I would say, would probably be 6 months from memory. It was a few years ago now. And that was involved in a number of meetings, mainly face-to-face at the time, because obviously we weren't using video calling to the same degree. And because it wasn't a primary function, it was being done as a sort of offline, you know, at the same time as other activities. I personally wasn't focused on it 100%. I was providing support in it as a function, still working in this best practice lean environment. And then we scoped it out. And I think from memory, again, the delivery of it was probably 6 to 8 weeks, something like that, from when we placed the order to proceed. Cost-wise, it's not expensive. I mean, development, you know, costs are variable, but depending on who you go to and what the platform you want. But it was thousands, not tens of thousands. So these things are not expensive. They don't need to be overly complicated either. And obviously there was internal costs as well, my time and my colleagues' time to work on that.
So there must have been a little bit of project management, you know, from your end, you know, there must have been you to manage the process, you know, but what was it? Like kind of well-defined scope, and then it was just really kind of keeping an eye on it. It wasn't a major full-time job then. You're saying it was like you weren't on this full-time then when you were implementing this then?
No, I was heavily involved in it, and I was keen to make it work because I was the one that having to deal with the frustrations and see the issues that came out of poor material management, you know. So I'd be on site working with engineers, looking to improve activities, process mapping things. And of course, you know, it's all very well process mapping an activity, saying we're going to start the installation on a given date and it's going to run for this particular duration. But if you've not got the materials delivered in time, or the material information that you're going to use is going to lead to errors in that material, the quantities, the wrong products, etc., then it's going to put delays in the process. So I was keen to address what we call root cause. So through the work that we'd done in the lean agenda, I'd learned that it was really important to go right back to the beginning of a process and address root cause, not just address the symptom. Because we could have blamed our engineers for, you know, the wrong product selections. But in truth, it was the system and the information they were being given in order to select from. So you've got this cultural acceptance of, oh, we've always done it that way. But we got to step away from that and say, well, there's a better way of doing it. So you go back to root cause analysis and say, what's the origins of the problem? And address the origins of the problem. And then that you'll get a more efficient process from the outset.
And that's exactly what you've done with this tool. And so just a wee bit then around the testing. So when you actually went to roll this tool out, how long was it? Just one or two sites you went to? Or was it, you obviously just didn't magically just implement it one day and everyone was using it. So how did that go, and you know, what kind of feedback did you get from the people starting to use it?
Okay, so we, as soon as the tool was delivered, we started working on it in a test environment. And the two aspects to delivering a tool like this, one is the platform itself and the functionality. And as I've said, it's fairly basic, really. It doesn't need to be overly complicated. You're taking information and you're pushing it along a system. So, you know, in essence, people select an item, it goes into a basket, they submit the basket, and that goes into a procurement platform ready to be converted into a purchase order. Because don't forget, this is a requisitioning system. However, that bit was fairly easy. There was a few iterations and a few revisions. As obviously, when you get anything that's delivered new, you think, oh, well, what about such a thing? And we added that, and that was fine. However, the big barrier, and what took a long time, was the quality of the data. Now, even though our data provider has been providing structured product data into the industry, and not just for us, you know, this is shared content that the whole of the sector uses, and they've been doing it for many, many, many years, and this is their core business. The quality of the data wasn't great. The information that we needed to use. In the past, what happened, Chris, is that people had accepted data as it was, and if it didn't really work for them, they just created a local sort of fudge, you know, they just fixed it locally with this symptom, fix the symptom type approach. And when you're using a platform like we develop, you can't do that. You need to take a more purist approach, and the information has to be correct, because if it's not correct at the beginning, it will be incorrect at the end, and it will lead to errors. So you have to address all of the errors. And then we had to get into an understanding of things like the type of measure. So, for instance, you know, is there a pack quantity related to a product? If it's a linear item, what's the length of the product? And the whole industry, even to this day, there are still some manufacturers out there who refuse to provide structured data in a way that supports procurement and estimation platforms. They just want to output it the way they want to output it. So a good example of that would be manufacturers of pipework still might want to price their pipe per meter. However, the product is sold and it's actually physically handled in a length, so it has to be priced per length. And then there's a breakdown within that where you have to know how long the product is. So it might be a piece of copper that's 3 or 6 meters long. It might be a piece of steel that's 3.2 or 6.4 meters long. But you need to know that information. And the system needs to be built around that product's information. You can't just put a fudge in there, just say it's one length and we don't care how long it is, because that won't work. So we had to, basically, to cut a long story short, the issue with the product data was much bigger than the platform itself. And we spent probably 6 to 12 months on it, and we had to delay the launch of it because the data was not usable. And also we recognized that we didn't even have product data for manufacturers we had agreements with. So we were buying products and there was no data available from them at all.
Right. So does that mean that you had to go and do a lot of work with your supply chain in terms of your suppliers then? Was there much interaction with them?
There was a lot. We reached out to our whole supply chain, and obviously varying degrees of complexity depending on the types of products and the levels of the agreements that we've got, whether it's technically or commercially led. But you're talking roughly 200 manufacturers that we have got, and obviously there's the core, there's the top, there's the spend, you know, by volume and by cost, and then you get this enormous tail. And the tail is the problem, because, you know, if we're buying, say we're spending £1 million on bracketry, for example, that manufacturer will be incentivized to work with you and to support structured data, and that's fairly achievable. But then when you've got this tail and the engineers only maybe buy 10 items a year, and you go to the manufacturer and say, we need to update your product data, they're less incentivized to do it. So it's a much more challenging. Basically, they'll just prioritize their own internal business, and they'll say, I'm sorry, we'll get around to that in 6 months. But the trouble is, unless you get their data off them structured working, you're not going to be able to process a purchase order in the same manner that you want to purchase everything. So it's kind of all or nothing.
So right. So again, that maybe just kind of leads quite nicely into what, you know, there's a lot of talk these days about the golden thread of information. So maybe, Phil, you know, in that context, then, you know, maybe tell us what the golden thread of information is, and, you know, in the context of your tool. And I think you've kind of set out already with talking about the data, but maybe just expand on that a little bit.
Okay, yeah. So the golden thread is it's an initiative, or it's a phrase that's been bandied around, and recently was an output from the Hackett report after the Grenfell disaster. And the in essence, it's not unique to construction, and the phrase itself is fairly generic. But it's about consistency and reliability of information in a chain. If we look specifically at a procurement transaction, what we aim to do by supporting the golden thread is to take manufacturer information at the outset, and we take that in its raw form, and the manufacturer creates that. And don't forget, the manufacturer is the owner of that data at that point. They're responsible for providing good quality, reliable data that represents the products. And then that's passed to typically a custodian, and in our case it would be Trimble Luckins as a DAR data provider. Then that information we pull into a requisition. We then move that from a requisition into a purchase order. That purchase order then is passed to the supply chain. The theory is that the supply chain uses the same information and there's no alteration or manipulation of it. So again, it's important that from the outset that it's accurate so the supply chain can use it. For instance, the box quantity has to be right. That's passed to the supply chain. The theory is they can then import that through an electronic routine. Hopefully they're not rekeying it. And then that creates a pick list for them internally. That pick list then, again, is in essence, is based on manufacturer information. It's just got our quantities against it. They pick it. They generate an internal request, and they then dispatch that. We get a goods receive note with it. That information on the goods receive note matches the information along the thread. And then we acknowledge the receipt of those goods, and then there's an invoice. And all that information, every single piece of, you know, if you take one product or 1,000 products along that chain, along that thread, it's that consistency, that repeatability of information without anybody making any changes to it or manipulation or interpreting it. And the problem is, even today, because the supply chain hasn't really adopted the golden thread, we still see this level of inconsistency or changes that happen at certain stages. And it has a massive impact because our piece of the thread is fairly robust. So we take information from the manufacturer, we handle it internally, we don't change it or alter it, and then we output that information, you know, whether it be for PPE or mechanical electrical items, whatever it is, we send it to supply chain. But if they can't connect to it, if it's not interoperable with their business, then they create their own at that point. They create new data. They create a siloed piece of information, which is in parallel to the thread.
So there's a lot of work then to do in terms of getting that thread right through from the actual source. You in terms of what you're saying, you can handle that data very, very well with this tool. Gets you right through, you get all that traceability. But the golden thread, really, there's still a bit of work to do in that. But I think you've explained what the golden thread is. So it's just taking that data right from the very, very source and being able to trace it right through to the end of the working life, then, wouldn't it be? So once you finish with it, it'd be a client then, I take it, would take that, and then the end user, the asset owner or operator would have that access to that information. So, okay, so what I'll say then, Phil, there is we talked about this before, there's the GS1 standards.
Yes.
You mentioned, and I think that's part of the tool as well, isn't it? So can you maybe tell us where it fits into this, your tool, but also just why is the GS1 standards important in terms of the solution and for the information management more generally?
Okay, so the GS1, the Global Systems One Standard, they're a not-for-profit organization that manage the codes globally. The allocation of codes that people would see as barcodes, they're referred to as an EAN, or which is the European Article Number, or a GTIN, which is the Global Trade ID Number. And there, in essence, there is a barcode on a product with a 13-digit number. That number is allocated to individual products. Now, these codes are available for manufacturers to buy in batches, and then they allocate them to their products. Now, we know that in other sectors, retail, for example, and healthcare, this is well established, and we know it works. And we know that in construction in other countries, Nordics, for example, it's heavily used. What we'd like to see is the adoption of GS1 codes in the UK as a single unique identifier that can be both machine and human readable. So it's physically on the packet. It can be scanned with a barcode or other proprietary system, but the code can also be embedded into procurement systems, into BIM platforms, so that we can be used as a lookup, as a central, as a version of the truth. You know, if we all could agree that one single piece of information, which is just a sequential number in essence, is always going to be the product that we're all talking about. You know, so if you said to me, Phil, I want you to order XYZ product, and this is the barcode for it, this is the GTIN code, I would know unequivocally that it's that item. There'd be no doubt in my mind. And when you receive that item, the chance of error is dramatically reduced, because, you know, assuming all the systems were working and were up to date and mapped correctly, then you would get the item just through the selection of a code.
It happened then, Phil, for that to be adopted. Would that mean like all manufacturers would need to have like these GS1 standards, or is that what you're saying there? You know, so that you can get this golden thread in that we talked about earlier, right through. Is that the missing piece of the jigsaw, would you say, essentially?
Absolutely. We'd like to see that. We'd like to see a broader adoption of the code. So there are probably circa 50% of the mechanical electrical plumbing contractors at the moment who've got GS1 codes to their products, and a number of them, especially where they sell them into a kind of crossover into retail environment, perhaps of some of the online traders, for example, they mandate the use of EAN codes. And obviously, if they're selling them in an environment where people are using scanning, to point of sale scanning, etc., then, you know, it's a given that the code's got to be on it. So we'd like to see much greater adoption of the code itself from a procurement perspective, and then the other parts of the sector, like looking at design, BIM, etc., and also information for the client in terms of as-built information, manuals, etc., that can all contain the same code references.
Sure. And what percentage now of the tool that you're using just now would have like GS1 codes like for them at the moment, would you say?
45% at the moment, approximately. But that's based on what we physically can get access to. I believe there's probably another maybe 15-20% of manufacturers who've got the codes who've just never really shared them.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So Phil, what have been the key benefits to NG Bailey as a business from adopting this digital solution?
Okay, the benefits have been very broad. But obviously, from our perspective, or from my perspective, looking at it just with my procurement hat on, they brought massive changes to our business. I think it's also important to say these things are not without the frustration. It's more, the importance is more on cultural change, because we could have plugged this system in years ago, and then we could have just let people do their own thing by saying, well, the system's over there and you should use it. But if we process their information or their requests outside of that environment, so just basically, I mean, if they'd allowed them to still fax it in, for example.
Yeah.
And it's much more important I can't stress this enough, that what businesses need to do is, it not just about bringing in technology. Technology does not solve your problems. It's about process and culture. You've got to look at what you do, and it's more important to stop doing the things that are detracting or they don't add value. And that could be multiple things. And what that will do is that will then erode that negative approach, and it will leave you with what works. And that's the approach we took. And we even to this day, part of my day job is to help the procurement teams just to address the gaps. So we'll get the odd request for information where there's a gap in the data. It may be a client specified item. We still need to critique the product information and make sure that it's relevant to what we want to buy. And even if it's a client specific requirement, we still want good structured data around it. But in terms of value to the business, I would say that the savings are very difficult to manage, because it's about cost avoidance. And anybody who just thinks that you plug this in and you make a change overnight, you're going to save, you know, telephone numbers. It's not realistic in my view. You know, anybody could kind of just come up with some analysis and put a number on the end of it. But I think it's more relevant to say what your cost avoidance is. So we have fewer issues with processing of orders. We get a high degree of accuracy, and we do measure that accuracy as well. We're running at sort of circa plus 95% plus on the consistency and the reliability of the product's information on the orders. So we know that's good, and it provides an easier approach for engineers. Obviously, once they get over the initial battles of, I don't like this new system, what was wrong with the old one, I like to do it that way, etc., etc., we do get a lot of positive feedback about the fact that they can just go in there and they can find the items that they want because they've used them with some frequency. And once they get used to the searching for them, that one of the problems in the industry is that there are just so many products available. I mean, you know, the building services sector is riddled with lots and lots of variation of products. And there are so many manufacturers out there offering alternatives and different ways of doing things. Our platform has 800,000 lines in it. And that's the items that we kind of suck in on an API feed. And what we did with the application that we developed, we then we whittle that down, and we only give the engineering teams the ability to select from about just over 200,000 lines. Mm-hmm. So we've basically three quarters of the data that we use that is available in the industry, we quarantine and don't use it, because we know that it's relevant to products we don't want to buy. So that just kind of sits there. We still maintain that because we might need to get access to it for a particular client, etc. But the core data, the 200,000 lines, is where we process information. And even within that, of course, there's a hierarchy of products that you're using very frequently, and then there's a tail which is low volume.
And what about traceability? Has it improved the traceability and been able to get access to, like, you know, where you know, identify issues and, you know, where things may have went wrong, or just even just to see, right, okay.
Yeah. Again,
that side of things, it must make your auditors a bit easier to manage, does it?
Yeah. I mean, it's very powerful. Handling product information based on structured data allows you to do a wealth of things. So previously, because our information that was processed either through manual intervention or it was just done through free text descriptions, there's pretty much no way of knowing what you've bought at a granular level. We may have been able to determine that we spent a seven-figure sum on electrical items, but that's really very broad spectrum. It's not, doesn't really tell you a great deal, you know, because that code that is electrical could have a mechanical product linked to it, because the description doesn't correlate. So it's wholly unreliable. However, using specific product IDs, in the way that we do from our data provider. It allows us to go and interrogate that information. So if I want to look at one single problem, someone said to me, how many M10 nuts, zinc plated M10 nuts did we buy in a given period? We can run a report, takes 10 minutes. We'll tell them how many we've bought on every project we bought them and from which supplier we bought them from. And now that's a very mundane item, but we can do it for everything. And when we have conversations with the supply chain, we use this information to go to them to look at category reviews, commercial negotiations, etc., because we're speaking from a position of truth. Now, yes. In the past, sourcing teams would have gone to the supply chain and they would have had to request almost what did we spend? Can you tell us what we spent with you last year? Now, that's not a very effective way to run your business if you have to ask someone else for the data what you spent. You need to know yourself. And we can do that now with a very high degree of accuracy.
So there's a great deal of reconciliation. You can see exactly that's brilliant, you know, because that's always been a big thing, isn't it, in the construction, just being able to get access to that data and actually see where you're spending. So again, you must be able to get a lot of data from that and actually analyse like sort of trends and patterns and things like that as well. Do you do anything like that with it, Phil?
We do, yeah. We do. I work with the sourcing team, so we can extract that data against a distributor, against the manufacturer, you know, against whatever you want, really. You can slice and dice the data however you need it, because it's built from a granular level, because it's built based on one product and the quantity of that and what we paid. You can run a whole host of reports. You can look at trends in your spend. I mean, we know that there's the consistency of buying something like some of our bracketry products, which we've got a selected manufacturer for some probably 5 years now, that doesn't change. And we can also look for leakage. So, you know, if we ever did see an alternative bracket manufacturer, we found the part codes for it, we would know that product had been bought incorrectly. You know, there'd be an evidence there of leakage, and you could establish what happened there, and you can trace that back. And also you can let the site team know that there's something that's come through the system that shouldn't have done.
Right. So I was going to say then, Phil, is there any plans to develop the solution like further, or, you know, does your supply chain get access to this, or how does it benefit your, you know, the supply chain? How does it benefit them?
Yeah, again, this is another thing that we developed. It was something that we did as kind of one of the second or third iterations of it, but we allowed access via from the supply chain. So they also have a login to see the products that we've got in the system that the engineers are selecting from. Now, you know, if you're in the sales team for a manufacturer and you want to support the engineering team in terms of product selections and quotations and schedules, etc., what it means is that you can log into the platform and you can see all the information that, in essence, you as the manufacturer provided, but it came along the thread and it's now available in the platform. Now, our engineers are logged in and the distributor's logged in and the manufacturer's logged in. Hey, presto, they're all looking at the same information. And if there's any gaps in it, then it's the manufacturer's job to plug those gaps. And it, what it does is it allows our engineers to be, everyone's singing from the same hymn sheet. We've all got access to we're all looking at the same picture, the same part code, the same description. We're not looking at different systems, at different, you know, outputs, different files, etc. It's all in the one place. And of course, you know, I say that there's this like it's a utopia. It's not, of course. There are issues with the updates, the data. Some supply chain partners have a change in staff, for instance, and then somebody will come along and they don't access it, so they'll create offline data. So you've got to, again, culturally, you can't take your foot off the gas. You've got to keep maintaining it, make it work for your business.
But that must be avoiding a hell of a lot of errors then further down the supply chain, you know, in terms of, you know, if they've got access to the right materials and you know it's the right materials, it must be reducing a lot of disputes or anything like that. Because so that's fantastic. So Phil, just a couple of quick questions then for you. You know, I think you've maybe answered this before, but what can others learn from this, do you think? And have you any other advice? You've given some lot of advice already, but is there anything else you would give to anyone who's maybe adopt a similar solution or just looking to invest in digital tools more generally?
I think what would I say about this? I think you've got to have a mindset within your business that you want to address this at at root cause. It's no use just leaving it to one department to try and address, and far too often businesses try and address symptoms. And also then they come along, or they approach a digital solutions provider, and then they think that that's going to solve their business issues and their culture and their processes. It's not. I would argue it will make it worse. If you embed a platform which isn't understood, it's not used, and you don't change the culture and process around that, you'll be in a worse situation, because you'll end up with different data silos, you'll end up with the systems that don't talk to each other. So you've got to kind of go back to real kind of just business management basics. What's your process at the moment? Where is it breaking down? And this is where the lean approach can help immensely, looking at value add, non-value add, and waste. If you look at those three aspects of a process, and you, obviously the goal is to remove waste, get rid of it, reduce non-value add, but the value add will work.
Brilliant. So, Phil, last one then is, I know you're very proactive and you're very passionate about change and digital transformation in the industry. So can you tell us a little bit more about the wider conversations you're having? And what's your aspirations and hopes for the future of the industry?
So wider conversations, Chris. What we've been doing is reaching out to obviously all our manufacturer base, because that's, you know, important that we maintain the working relationship and they know what our expectations are to keep that momentum. Then beyond that, the trade associations. So there are many, I would argue, perhaps too many trade associations in the industry. And there's a danger that they, because there's quite a number of them, and some of them are fringe and they're doing different things, and they may be only supporting their member requirements rather than the greater good, as it were. So I've been working with the and delivering a number of presentations for these trade bodies, and getting close to them to make sure that we put over a contractor's view. Because we're conscious that we don't want to dictate the way that things should be done. We're just presenting the fact that the benefits and the savings we've achieved. And in order to take this to the next level, what we need is a consistent industry-wide approach. What we don't need is more silos, more information or systems that are not interoperable or only suit one particular subset of the sector's needs. You know, we don't need a procurement solution. We need an industry solution. Yes. You know, we don't need, and I would argue that the BIM agenda has potentially caused some of these disconnections, if you like, because although the BIM itself is a fantastic concept and has taken us, you know, in the right direction in terms of the digitalized construction agenda, there's aspects of it that has been left behind. Information around certain products which don't need to be modeled, for instance, has been arguably, you know, mostly ignored. So I think what it's about, the work we've been doing and the conversations I'm having, it's about going out and saying we need a global solution. We need something that works, that benefits the industry, whether you're a contractor, whether you're a distributor, whether you're a manufacturer, a designer, a client. It's, you know, it's for the good of the industry, and everybody will benefit from that.
Fantastic. Phil, that's a good way to leave it. Thanks so much for your time. I really appreciate that. That's been some really, really useful insights in there. So I wish you all the well. I wish you all the best in your future conversations and your dialogues. And you're doing some great stuff in the industry, and so is NG Bailey. It's a great, and thanks for allowing NG Bailey you to come on and talk about this and showing a bit of leadership in the industry. It's you're playing a key role, and it's great to see it. So thanks very much, Phil.
Pleasure. Thank you, Chris. Thanks for the invite.
Cheers.